Manatee Memorial Hospital, providing advanced healthcare services in a caring and compassionate environment, presents Manatee Talk Radio. Here's Melanie Cole.
According to the National Stroke Association, the average person with atrial fibrillation is 5 times more likely to suffer a stroke than someone with a regular heartbeat. My guest today is Dr. Srinivas Iyengar. He's a cardiologist and the structural heart director at Manatee Memorial Hospital. Welcome to the show, Dr. Iyengar. What is atrial fibrillation?
Well, atrial fibrillation is an arrhythmia of the heart that basically means the top part of the heart is not beating in conjunction with the bottom part of the heart. And when that happens, the top part of the heart can basically be erratic, and the blood that's in those chambers can swirl and eventually develop clots, and clots could eventually break off and actually lead to stroke.
So what is the first line of defense? If somebody has been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, what do you do for them first?
Well, normally atrial fibrillation has two issues. The main thing is that it's an arrhythmia. So we want to control the arrhythmia with medication. But also atrial fibrillation, as I just mentioned, can cause strokes. And the patients that get the strokes are usually have a risk score. And we do in medicine, we have a risk stratification tool called a CHADS-VASc score, which basically stratifies patients as being at a higher risk of stroke. Now, if you are and have an elevated risk of stroke, we basically place patients on blood-thinning medications like Coumadin or Warfarin or some of the newer medications like Xarelto or Eliquis or Pradaxa. Again, though, not everyone can tolerate being on blood-thinning medications, hence why we've been trying to develop new strategies on trying to treat these patients.
So for people who need an alternative to those blood thinners, tell us about some of the procedural interventions that you do there at Manatee Memorial Hospital.
Well, there's innovative technology that's been developed over the years that's now FDA approved, and this is called the Watchman Left Atrial Appendage Occlusion Device. This device is utilized for patients who, number one, have atrial fibrillation or something called paroxysmal atrial fibrillation, which means they come and go into the rhythm. Patients that also have a high risk of stroke, basically necessitating a blood-thinning medication. Now, if they cannot tolerate a blood-thinning medication because of a GI bleed, or they frequently fall, or they have an allergy to these medications, the Watchman device is then indicated.
So tell us about what the Watchman device is. It's a left atrial appendage closure device, but explain to the listeners what that really means.
Well, I'd like to tell everyone at home listening that basically the left atrial appendage is a part of the heart. It's literally like a pouch coming off the left atrium. It literally does nothing physiologically or clinically or basically just a part of the anatomy that's there. Unfortunately, it's a pouch that collects blood, though, and an AFib, patients develop clots from that area. So the Watchman device has been developed as literally, when I tell patients, it's a cork on a bottle. We literally like to put this device in, and it's shaped like a little mushroom cap, and we place it into the appendage via a vein in the right groin, or left groin for that matter, and we place it through the heart, and we place the device into the appendage and release it into that area, which thereby closes off any blood flow into the appendage and hopefully, obviously, prevents any strokes in the future.
When you close off that appendage, is collateral circulation what happens next, or was it kind of going around that area anyway?
Well, exactly. So at that point in time, the Watchman device that's placed in the appendage will then get absorbed by the heart, and actually skin will grow over the area. We call that endothelialization of the Watchman device, and what will happen is that there will be no detriment to the patient having a device in the heart, and now we basically hope that the patient can now prevent any strokes in the future, but also we can take the patients off blood-thinning medications after a predetermined time.
And that was going to be my next question, is medicational intervention change after Watchman, and is the Watchman something that stays in there, as you said, it has that endothelialization, so it just becomes a part of the body then, and it's there permanently?
Exactly. It gets absorbed by the body. It's there. It's a permanent implant. And again, we can take most patients, I would say well over 97% of the patients nationally in registries and clinical studies, off Coumadin or blood-thinning medication after 45 days.
And just to be clear, this does not stop the atrial fibrillation in and of itself, correct? It just reduces the symptoms that would increase the risk of stroke.
Basically, what it does, it takes away the stroke risk associated with atrial fibrillation and takes people off blood thinning medications, but it does not affect the underlying arrhythmia. Atrial fibrillation is an electrical imbalance or an electrical arrhythmia. This device does not interfere with that pathway. This is strictly for stroke prevention.
And there's another structural procedure that you do called TAVR. Explain what that is.
Sure. TAVR is called transcatheter aortic valve replacement. Basically, and this is an exciting technology that's available now, it's been in use clinically for the last 6 years in the United States, but in Europe it's been used for well over 10, 12 years. Patients who have a disease called aortic stenosis, which is basically a heavily calcified valve in the heart. There's four valves in the heart. The aortic valve is controlling flow from the heart to the aorta, which is a big pipe that comes out of the heart and feeds the rest of the body, including the brain, the intestines, the legs, everything. So the valve called the aortic valve, when that gets tight or calcified or stenotic, it prevents blood from coming out of the heart to the rest of the body, resulting in symptoms like chest pain, shortness of breath, and dizzy spells or lightheadedness. Now, if the valve is not replaced once these symptoms start and the valve is getting very tight, the prognosis is extremely poor. Historically, we would only have one option for these patients, and that was open heart surgery. There was no good percutaneous or minimally invasive way of treating these patients. And as we know, a lot of individuals, especially the patients that are over the age of 80 years old, who develop this condition, can't get open heart surgery because they're just too sick and too frail. So TAVR came along to basically fill the gap for these patients. And actually, we've seen now in the last 2 years that TAVR not only filled the gap for the older patients, but is actually equivalent, if not better, for patients who are even intermediate risk for getting this valvular disease or valve replacement. And the way this procedure usually occurs is we go through an artery in the groin called the femoral artery. We introduce a big sheath, basically a sheath that goes through the artery, and the catheter will then go through this sheath, and we actually cross the old valve with a wire and a catheter and this new valve, which is on a balloon or it's expanding by itself, and we actually place a brand new valve in the patient's old valve. And within, say, less than a minute, once we release it, the valve is completely functional and taking over the role of the old aortic valve. It's quite amazing.
That is absolutely fascinating. And as a valve replacement option, what are some of the advantages? Is this considered minimally invasive or less invasive?
It's less invasive, minimally invasive, and I would tell you right now, Melanie, this is something that's been revolutionary because the patients themselves, we can do a procedure on a patient who was deemed to be too high risk for open heart surgery, go through their groin, put a new heart valve in less than an hour, and have them home in less than 2 days. And back to basically when they're at home, they're back at home playing golf, going out with kids, walking the dog, no rehab, no need for excessive concerns about a big incision in the chest. It's an amazing thing that we can provide patients. And the studies that have been done international and nationally have shown that we can actually place this device in patients with lower risk. So we're actually going towards a situation where eventually, not yet, but eventually I feel that we will actually start placing these valves in patients that are equal risk at surgery.
And is this permanent solution? Is it something that might have to be replaced down the line?
Definitely. I would say that no matter what we do in medicine, we always have to take a grain of salt and some real sage advice of what we've seen prior. Open surgical valves, even the best ones that are bioprosthetic. And when I say bioprosthetic, I mean valves that have either a pig valve or a cow valve in them, not the mechanical valve. They eventually degenerate over 10 to 15 years, sometimes quicker, sometimes longer. I suspect that TAVR valves down the road will have the same issue because it is a bioprosthetic valve. But the beauty is that if this valve does degenerate, we have easy accessibility of placing another valve in a valve. In fact, Melanie, right now, when we have surgical valves that have gone bad, as in they've gotten stenotic, they're not replaced by open heart surgery. I actually go in there and place a TAVR valve in an old surgical valve, and that is now considered the standard of care.
In just the last few minutes, Dr. Iyengar, what should people with atrial fibrillation think about when seeking care?
Number one, when you have atrial fibrillation, please see your doctor, number one, and hopefully get referred to a cardiologist for further evaluation. Once the evaluation has been performed, if you are someone who cannot tolerate blood thinning medication and because of your stroke risk, needs to be on it, Watchman makes a definite, I would say, a much more adequate solution than not taking anything at all.
And why should they come to Manatee Memorial Hospital for their care?
Well, I'll tell you right now, Melanie, Manatee Memorial Hospital, just in the last 2 years, has just skyrocketed with the amount of technology that's available at the hospital. We not only perform the Watchman device, we also perform TAVR, like we just discussed, and we have an additional device called the mitral clip for patients who have a different type of valve disorder called mitral regurgitation. All of these procedures are done in a minimally invasive fashion, and for the hospital to have all three devices in one setting is quite amazing and quite rare, for that matter, even in these national university settings.
Thank you so much for being with us today. What amazing information. You're listening to Manatee Talk Radio with Manatee Memorial Hospital. For more information, you can go to manateememorial.com. That's manateememorial.com. Physicians are independent practitioners who are not employees or agents of Manatee Memorial Hospital. The hospital shall not be liable for actions or treatments provided by physicians. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.